Hi, Tommy.
Hello.
Hi, Mark.
Yo, yo.
Hi, folks. we're going to do a few things today. It's all coming up Trump, because, you know, what else is there to talk about, really? he does make himself the center of attention pretty easily. But let's start with something else, and then we'll get to the other stuff. Let's start with this. This is, I'll set this up. This is Billboard Chris. He's a Canadian fella who likes to go around with billboards on. This one, I believe, says children cannot consent to puberty blockers. And they film, people tend to have visceral reactions to this. And if people want to talk, then they film the thing. He's talking to a lady who claims to be, I think she's saying she's a child, like a social worker, which is interesting. And they, of course, get into the whole idea of gender-affirming care and can children actually consent or identify as the opposite gender. And this is part of that clip, which I think will feed into a general conversation about all things reality.
Problem-solving aspect of your brain isn't fully developed until the age of 25 as well, correct?
Okay, well, I'm still saying the way that I process information, the way I see it, the way things go through, that's how I, like, the same way that I thought things when I was a, like, when I was a kid, I see it now. And, you know, it's how you grow up. It's who you speak to. It's your parents. It's your family. And because I had parents who supported me and supported the way I thought, I was able to become an adult who feels okay.
Okay, one last question, if I may. What would you say to all of the detransitioners who were harmed as children, who are now saying, what the heck did you do to me? I was struggling in life with various other things. And on my first appointment, you started me on this regimen of drugs and then surgeries. And now I'm infertile. I've had my breasts cut off as a child. I'm miserable. I feel like my life is ruined. What do you say to those children who are now young adults?
I'm really sorry that that happened to you. I'm really sorry that as a child you experienced something extremely traumatic and it led you one way or the other. And I'm really sorry you made an intense, extreme decision when you were a kid that now as an adult, you don't feel it was right. But that doesn't mean all those people that detransition, it doesn't mean that that's why everyone thinks.
Are you familiar with the statistics on gender dysphoria about how many kids grow out of it?
Gender what? Dysphoria?
Just gender dysphoria.
So like not feeling like you're the right
gender? Yeah, that's right.
So is this the right clip?
They give kids puberty blockers.
That's what you sent me.
It's not the interaction I wanted to highlight.
Well, it's still a good one. Hang on, let's finish this.
She starts off saying, "By the way, I process things." Now, like, if you can't trust this woman to process anything, she walked out of the house looking like that.
What is this physique?
It's like it looks like she's wearing like dirty trash bags or something. I don't.
It looks like a trash maximum bag depends.
This is like if you ever wanted to have a real discussion about the dangers of seed oils, right there. Like this is all seed oils. This is canola. This is what's going on here. What the fuck? You know, here's a good thing, right? These people actually help me with my body self image, because sometimes, you know, if you feel a little bit fat or they feel a little bit bloated, all the rest of it, and you're like, oh, I need to lose some weight, and then you see these people, you're like, I'm doing fine. I'm actually fine. I'm Adonis compared. What is this? What is this exactly?
At what point does someone's visual representation of themselves to the world discredit their opinion on anything?
Yeah,
you can be like, how could I take any opinion you have seriously if that's how you're presenting yourself?
I've just never worn a drawstring trash bag as an outfit. No.
Maybe for this Halloween, yeah. Tommy.
With a little side roll, yeah. Hanging out. That's not your bag.
I'm gonna. That's what I'm doing for Halloween for sure. Yeah, I'm gonna wear a drawstring trash bag and tell them I'm dressed like a fat liberal.
she got side boob wrong.
Oh God! Yes, up here. Anyway, so I'll take the blame for sending probably the wrong timestamp, but there's a bit in the conversation before this where she's going on talking about how in order to raise kids properly, you have to respect them and their boundaries and what they want, because yeah, it's about individual agency. And so Billboard Chris brings up a trans person and misgenders them, or as I would say,
I think that's here. If you want to,
yeah, did you hear how she switched his argument on him?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Cause he said, a child is struggling with identity issues. They go to the doctor and the first thing that they do is shove drugs down that child's throat. And she said, well, I would tell that child, I'm sorry that the child made that decision.
Yeah, no, exactly. So this goes to the mental contradiction. He lays something out and she's like, well, I'm really sorry that you made an extreme decision that you regret, but that doesn't mean that everyone thinks that. It's like, but hang on. If you're saying there's a portion of the population, right, who's undergoing this care, who are being mistreated, therefore you should stop all treatment and then figure out what a better treatment for everyone would be, right? Like, imagine you couldn't do this with anything else. You couldn't say that, like, if your cancer treatment actually killed, you know, a substantial amount of people who are undergoing treatment, that would be bad.
That speaks to a larger issue with their medical system in general. I mean, look at the statistics on something like chemotherapy, where that's the go-to and the survival rate is atrocious, versus if the doctors were to say, well, listen, before we go through any medicalized treatment, what you have to do is cut out all carcinogens, go on a paleo diet, you know, to actually address the cause of the thing instead of nuking the symptom. And I think that's the issue here, is that what they're doing is it's all a misdiagnosis. So he's saying this, listen, if they're coming in with six comorbidities, mental comorbidities, if they're autistic and they suffered from abuse and they went through this, maybe we should look at who are they trying to please? What is putting them in the state of being where they're searching for an answer? And the answer being given is, well, you're in the wrong body. Maybe we're missing some other opportunities to properly diagnose why these kids are suicidal or upset or depressed. And they always just wash that away, like you didn't even bring it up. They're like, oh, well, you know, obviously the correct diagnosis for any childhood issues is that they're born in the wrong body. I mean, there's just so many levels of insanity there that you can't even, like, it always amazes me, like, that these people are willing to talk because they're not interested in a conversation. They can't even listen to you. There's something, I guess, in their, like, deep psychological back of their mind where they're craving someone to maybe enlighten them, because why are they engaging and yet not engaging at all with what's being said or any criticism? They're just like, no. He has another one he posted today that I saw, the same thing. Brings up that issue, and the girl's like, he's like, what about all the kids that get the detransitioners that get hurt? She's like, well, whatever. It's worth it. It's like, for what? It's worth, like, what are you trying to achieve here?
Madeline Albright.
Well, I think also, and this seems to be the constant refrain, is that somewhere in the back of their head, they're like, well, they can just reverse it. You know, if you cut off your breast, we'll just get breast implants. They seem to be allergic to this idea that puberty blockers are not reversible, and nothing you can tell them, all the studies and all the facts and all the factoids possible, doesn't break that narrative. They are immune to any counter narrative that says that, hey, you're letting kids decide something that's going to permanently alter their body for their entire rest of their life. Like, that's and a 10-year-old cannot make those decisions because they don't have enough experience to understand what rest of your life means.
Right. I have trouble taking these people seriously. And I know there are children. I know there are people like being hurt, but
what's it's wrong, like, with you, Tom?
When I see this, it's hard for me to even talk about, because I'm like, okay, if I ask this woman, can I tattoo my son's face up, like my 4-year-old's face up to shit, and call him Minigun Kelly in remembrance of Machine Gun Kelly? She would say no. Can I bring him to the bar and get him trashed and hook him up with a 30-year-old stripper? She would say no. You know,
well, hang on. Actually, yeah, that might, I don't be know. That might be, I'm supporting not, sex, I'm not workers. Sure. That might be okay.
I'm not convinced. But I think that their perspective is so off. You don't know. It's a crapshoot. They could be like,
but well, it's but it's they what the but child they, wants. They accept all these other limitations on what children, decisions children can make and what children can be exposed to, but this one thing. And it's like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, how can I even take you seriously? You know,
well, you can't. That's the problem. Because that's
They're useful idiots for this whole transhumanist regime. As trying to eventually condition people to desire to transcend humanity, and this is what Dugin talks about when we get to the reading. His analysis of liberalism is that's the end point of it, and it's the logical end point of it, that now liberalism becomes to liberate oneself from humanity itself, because the self-diagnosis system of tyranny becomes a tyranny of the tyranny of self itself, right? So you have this hyper individualism that isolates the person, the individual, to such an extreme that the only thing they're left with is to try to escape themselves. And this is just laying that foundation that is, you know, from us on the outside, it of course appears pure insanity, because it's like, you can't get rid of this. Like, you can't, like, this is, you're stuck with it. You know,
it's part of the human
existence.
I think it's beyond that, though. I think what it is it's really an attempt to replace God, right? Mm-hmm. And if you can make yourself in whatever image that you can functionally, you know, comprehend in your own mind and create and invent and imagine, then you're no longer created in the image of God, right? And if you water down, I was talking to last podcast I just released, if you water down these identities to where there's 7 billion individual identities, then no identity actually has any consequence. It has no merit to it. Right. Mm-hmm. So that effectually gets you to a point where Marx was talking about a classless or identityless society. And so that's what the goal is. They push this odd, you know, conundrum of like just this, I don't know, this nonsensical base of identity politics on you. And you're like, okay, what does a conservative Muslim and LGBTQ have in common? Yet that's your voting block. It doesn't make any sense. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to water down all morality, all belief, and all identity to nothingness, to being completely valueless, to the value of zero. And they take that zero and prove like show you that, oh, you don't have the wherewithal within yourself to figure it out on your own. You have to depend on us.
Yeah, and it's clearly like this. If you look for what is the sensible through line to the entire thing, it's always dismantling and destabilizing the identity in kids. Like, this is the only thing, like you were saying, this is the only one where they're like, oh no, the kids have 100% agency when it comes to their identity, and that can be it can be anything as long as it's fluid. If it's stable, then that's bad, because that could be conservative. But if it's destabilized and fluid, then they have 100% agency, and you have to grant them, they're purely libertarian when it comes to children's identity, and they're fascists in every other topic, including the way you think about it. You're not allowed to have your opinion about whether kids need a stable identity or not, because that's fascism to them. But you got to give the kids total freedom when it comes to not having any stable sense of identity, so they can be brainwashed, made into useful idiots, made angry. And I feel like, I wonder, is this almost a necessary consequence of a godless paradigm? Like, it's because if you don't believe in God, then what does matter? What's the point of being stable? Why not be a revolutionary? Why not overthrow everything?
Well, ultimately they're all about, they're all about, and yes, it's a godless paradigm, because they're all about following your passions, as fleeting as those passions might be. And especially when you're a child and you're chasing this whole identity thing, that's fleeting. That comes and goes. Like, I mean, I'm 44 years old. I'm not the same person today that I was when I was 34 years old.
Right.
Let alone when I was 4 years old, you know, and I'd argue I didn't have the sense God gave a mule when I was 34, I shouldn't have been making decisions for myself then, you know? So, you know, it's just, it's one of those things that when you look back at it from my perspective, I look back like on what I would have chosen whenever I was a child or what my kids would have chosen when they were young. And still to this day, they make decisions and I'm like, okay, that's what you want to do. Let me tell you what's going to happen, you know? And sometimes I, you know, rain on their parade a little bit, but.
Well, it's a strange equation.
It's the way you accumulate wisdom is you are feeding off of the wisdom of elders of the authority figures in your life.
Yeah. Well, it's also this, sorry, Jay, just let me get this thought out because I'm going to lose it. It's something the left seems to be brilliant at doing, which is captivating sort of universal truths and then associating them with their side. Like guess what? Puberty is a kind of no one's comfortable in going through puberty. So they're like, oh, are you uncomfortable going through puberty? Well, that means you hate conservatives. It's the exact same thing they do with climate change, right? Climates are always changing. And if you don't take the whole load of bullshit that they've attached to a universal, like how can you argue the climate's not changing?
Right.
That's how it happened forever and will happen forever. But then they've grabbed it, claimed ownership over it, and then politicized it. And they did the same thing. That's all this is them politicizing puberty and going, well, we're going to take the, now you're on our side.
So yeah. Well,
how do you argue that?
It's the Tom, and you've touched on this is that, transhumanism is really trying to transcend humanity into God. And you have these individuals who are sitting at the top who want to be like God. And what is that? Well, you act like God and you think like God and you present like God and you create like God. And they're using medical technology to essentially create this new human. And then once they have that act of creation, to them, it'll be, well, we're God. Like, we're fulfilling all the surface level identities of God. And we're creating this new morality that people will have to, it's almost like we will create this new covenant, which is just what the social credit score and all the rest of it will essentially be. And there, because if you follow this idea that religion is just a story and it was created to control sheep herders out in the desert, if you internalize that narrative and the idea too much, this is what you get, where it's like, well, we'll just recreate a new religion, right? We'll just use all the religious technology to control these people. But
I never put this together. I'm sorry, Jason. Yeah, you triggered something in my brain. This just popped to my head.
But he does.
So for years I heard those on the left talk about religion and they say, oh, well, parents drag their kids to church. They brainwash their children, right? At that point, they're already arguing for that child to have some agency, right? And so this is just like an evolution of that point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what did, who was the biologist, new atheist
Dawkins?
Dawkins, yeah. Dawkins famously said that religion is child abuse. And you know, everyone, including myself at the time, was as a devout new atheist, was like, right? And then you see actual state sponsored child abuse, and you're like, wait a minute, you know.
Well, that's the interesting thing. There's always
time out. Let's not equate Sunday school with giving a 5-year-old puberty blockers.
But they do. I saw it today. No, today, yeah. The Serfs retweeted because I don't know if it was in a book or something, but there was a passage about Vivek Ramaswamy being influenced into conservatism by his piano teacher from the time he was 5 until he was in high school. And so this leftist is retweeting it out, saying, don't you guys call that grooming? How's that any different than a teacher saying that trans kids exist? And it's just, you can understand the argument there because they see it as the same thing. Raising is grooming to them because it's always this very closely, almost a one-for-one inversion, which is the same thing they do with the Christianity thing, with the being like God. Like in one worldview, you say there is God and I should try to be like him. The other one says there is no God. I should be God. And then the even the moral system is really closely mirroring Christianity, just inverted. And so they did the same thing with grooming. It's like, oh,
see, if I would have, this is why I'm not on Twitter, because if I would have responded to that, I would have just gotten kicked off of Twitter. Because I would have been
do it
like,
here. Let's do it.
Because I would have been like, conservatives exist and trans kids don't exist. So,
yeah, one, no, but I even thought about, because I was going to retweet, well, one is normal and helpful, rational. The other one is evil and whatever. And that they would see that and go, yeah, conservatism is evil and trans is normal and rational. And how do you argue with a completely different worldview that
you can't,
that the, all the harms in the world come from Sunday school? You see the argument all the time. They're like, well, priests rape way more people than trans men.
Do they?
I don't know, maybe the priests are trans.
Like, we don't know.
But here's the thing: it doesn't matter if it's true as long as they believe it. It doesn't matter, right?
Exactly.
And Matt Sawiz says, "Why does everyone have so much faith in the Holy Bible yet they do not hold the Iliad and the Odyssey in the same regards?" Well, here's a rub: is that from an Orthodox perspective, the Odyssey and Iliad and all the Greek gods and all the rest of it are also valid. They all did exist. It's just that, you know, the one true God has primacy over all things.
Why would anybody, well, like, I would counter that argument with, why does anybody have faith in a book at all?
Right.
That's not where I put my faith. So, you know.
Yeah. And again, from an Orthodox Christian perspective, the Bible is not the be all and end all of everything. It's
sola scriptura is a complete Western creation. And that's, I mean, that's another rabbit hole for another day, probably.
Yeah.
But we are at the 20-minute mark. We are at the 20-minute mark. Let me just remind everyone, you can always go over to our Patreon and sign up to our Patreon. Give us $5 a month at minimum. And I'm posting more and more content there on the daily. Please like, subscribe, and share the video. Let people know we exist. It's always helpful. Please go check out Tommy Salmon's stuff over at Year Zero, I have the link down below. It's for the Libertarian Institute.
Yeah.
Right. Go check on that as well and go check out his stuff. Tommy is in my permanent weekly rotation. His shows are fantastic. And his ad reads for what's the coffee company again?
Fox and Sons.
Fox and Sons copy read is the best one out there. And I hear
We're supposed to be doing another ad read with Beatrix will be joining me. So. Put some BBC in your mouth.
Let's get to Mark, do you want to do something, say something really brief?
I was just gonna comment about the Iliad thing. Can you look at a history of successful civilizations built on the lessons contained within the Iliad? That would be my argument
Is the Iliad a complete system? You know, you're dealing with a complete system when you can turn to it to understand what to do when your father's dying, or how to raise your child, or in different crises. If what you're dealing with is only one directional, or only gives you a certain amount of information, you're dealing with more of an ideology than a full what we call phronema, which is a worldview. This is all a different conversation, because we feel if we get into this track, we're off to the races in a different way. Let's talk about Trump. Here's a mugshot seen around the world. Of course, now he's monetized this.
He's Trump. He's in the jail.
Into everything. Any first comments on Donald?
You go, Tommy, if you got some. I got too many.
I mean, for his mugshot, I thought it was great. I thought it was hilarious. I was like, look at this guy. This guy is so aware of marketing. He understands marketing so well, and he understands entertainment and the value of television advertisement and all of these things so well that he knew going into this, how do I approach this? And you saw, like, with his attorneys and all of the people within his inner circle that turned themselves in the day before, they were all smiling, right? Mm. But he said, no, this isn't, I'm not going to smile at this. It may be a joke, right? But how do I make the most out of this is what he's thinking. How do I turn this into an opportunity? Right. And this is how successful people think. They look at, you know, they, that old saying, making lemonade out of lemons, you know, they look at everything as an opportunity and how to capitalize on this opportunity. And so that's what he did. He went in like the counterpuncher he is. And he said, you're coming at me. Now I'm coming at you. And that's what this mugshot says. It says, I'm coming. I'm coming for vengeance. I'm not going to let you be. This isn't going to be easy fight. It's going to be a knockout drag out. We're going all 12 rounds and I'm going to be in your face the entire time. That's what he's saying. And people love that, man. Like, I'm a big UFC fan, right? When I know those guys that are always in the fight, that are never out of the fight. And I love those guys that never get knocked out and they always have the potential of knocking that other guy out and they'll go five rounds. Right.
No.
Like if you, I think about like the Nate Diaz versus Leon Edwards fight, Leon Edwards beat Nate Diaz for 4.5 rounds. But you know what? At the end of that fight in the fifth round, whenever it was down to the money minutes, Nate Diaz was laying it on Leon and Leon didn't know what to do. You watch that Alexander Volkanovski versus Islam Makhachev fight. That fifth round, Alexander Volkanovski's on top of Islam Makhachev, beating the shit out of him. And Islam Makhachev's looking at the clock like, how much time do I have to put up with this? How much longer do I have to put up with this? Islam ended up winning the fight, but Alexander Volkanovski won that war, that mental war, that warfare and getting in there. And he finished the fight stronger than he started it. And that says something. And people love those types of competitors. And that's what Trump, that's what this mugshot says. He's like, you can knock me down, but you're not going to knock me out.
No. Well, yeah, so what's sorry, I'm not a fight expert, but the is it Tai Chi, the one where the whole system is based on taking your opponent's energy and just using it against them, whatever they, if they're coming at you.
Aikido's like that. Aikido, judo's like that.
Right? This
like,
is political that. Like, whatever they can throw it. I'm like, I don't, could he have planned this better if it was his campaign? I don't see, like, it's the best thing that could have.
In like, what was it? In like 2 days, he raised like $7 million off of this. You know, it's like,
I mean, the only thing he can really do is try to do as much damage. If they're going to actually put him in jail, which is crazy. But if they actually pull that trigger and put him in jail for any amount of time, then he's got to do as much damage as he can. Cause this is,
but you can still, you can still run for president from jail. There's no law that says you can. Mm-hmm.
Like how far are they going to kick themselves in the foot with this? Is that the right phrase? Because I think they should have already realized this is the worst mistake they've ever made. Because it seems like there's a lack of awareness of their own voting base, at least a certain segment of it, that there are a lot of Democrats, at least today's Democrats, the left that they've embraced, that embraces violence, that embraces riots, also looks up to criminals. And now Trump is the badass.
Who did I hear say the other day that every person that's been locked up unfairly, that feels like they were incarcerated unfairly, looks at this and relates.
Yep.
And that's a new voter for Trump.
And those were right. This is our stronghold. And now they're going, oh wait, he's like us. I mean, I was thinking about it. If you want to talk about like the purple Caesar, I mean, my beef, what I've always had against Trump is that he's purple, right? I think he's a 90s Democrat who said that all the time. And I think that their messaging is falling apart now. You can't hold these contradictory things that he's this racist, evil fascist and you locked him up. Can't be both. And so by going this way, they've completely destroyed that other narrative. And this is going to win him Democrat voters. It's not going to, like, the Republican base, they're like, okay, whatever, we knew this already. But there's a whole segment that was really strong on their side that's going, oh, wait, I like this guy now. Fuck you.
Well, and then there's also the normies that look at what's going on and go, wait, this isn't our country. This isn't normal for our country. Yeah. And we got to rally around this guy because they're turning our country into a banana republic where you lock up your political opponents. And that's not the way that we operate. And we've never operated that way. Right. And they've never seen a scenario where a president has gone through this kind of mayhem. And it's even made like, I've even seen Scott Horton say that he's thinking about voting for Trump because of all the stuff that's going on. It's made me consider voting for Trump because I'm not a Trump supporter. I'm like, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't vote in national elections. That's not where my focus is. I don't think that's really helpful. But at the same time, it's like, if it pisses off all the right people, maybe I'm going to do it.
Well, this is it now. Now they've made him an underdog. I think in 2016, he was kind of viewed as a political underdog with Hillary before we knew what the hell was going on. But he wasn't like that much of an underdog. He was still a contender. He was the opponent. Now he is the underdog to the state. Yeah. He is literally David versus Goliath. They've set this narrative into motion that they can't take back. They've rung the bell. They've just made announcements that the trial is going to be televised. Of course,
yeah, trial is going to be streamed on YouTube.
Of course,
they used to be able to frame him as the bully.
And I hope he represents himself. That would be awesome.
No, I don't think
there's no better television, man.
No, I need Alex Jones too.
And this speaks to like everyone saying that he should have taken part of the debates. It's like no.
No, that was brilliant too.
He will win. He will do more numbers. Well, he did more numbers talking to Tucker. Mm-hmm. But he'll do way bigger numbers in any debate doing with his show trial. Like no matter how this works out. He's going to crush in the ratings.
But I think with the debate,
put it down to that point.
With the debate, I think he's well aware that that was just a setup by the Democrats at Fox News to make every Republican candidate look like shit. And they achieved it. And he knew better. He's like, why would I go out there and put my hand up like a grade school kid and debase myself? And he saw that coming a mile away. Like he's getting wise.
I wish he would have participated in the Blaze Forum and not participated in the debate. That would have been even more of a kick in the face for Fox.
Was the Blaze Forum the one that Tucker hosted where he?
Yeah.
I mean, to do a pro wrestling kind of analogy, like in 2016, he did all that stuff. He was like Survivor Series, went through it all and got the belt. Now coming back and doing the rematch, it's like he doesn't have to go through all that. He doesn't have to win the Royal Rumble again. He already had the belt. Now he's going right to the steel cage. He's jumping.
He's becoming
all the other things to go right to the death match.
He's turning himself into the anti-hero.
Right.
And I mean, it's like, that's hard to, I mean, that's like a Stone Cold Steve Austin kind of persona,
Well, I wanted to play for you. Did you hear the rap?
It would be nice if he did come out, crack a beer, and down it, though. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, no, but there's things that, because when
no, it'd you be see a Diet when, Coke. It has to be a Diet Coke, right?
Yeah, he doesn't drink beer, but it would have been cool.
No, but Jason always talks about there's flashpoints in history when things are inspirational and people are like writing songs about it and art is coming out of it. And right now, at least as of yesterday, there's a Hasidic Jew music producer did an AI Trump rap. That is number two on iTunes. I saw an interview with this guy on TMZ, and even TMZ was having to be uncritical towards Trump, just being like, what the hell is going on? What inspired you to do this? And the guy's like, well, I'm kind of apolitical. I just thought it'd be hilarious. And the thing blew the fuck up. Like, people are writing songs about this guy. If you want to talk about being a legendary in your own time, even if it's beyond his own, it's even bigger than him. It's not even what he like. This is something that was done to him that gave him legend status. So I don't think he can even take the credit. But there's something bigger than him, which has always been kind of part of MAGA and what I've liked about MAGA.
Hang on, I'm just trying to find it. There's a lot of things about it, but
it's not even that great. But it's the sort of social phenomenon around it it's appealing to people on both sides.
Yeah, it's like the meme. It's caught like a mimetic kind of form. Yeah.
If you guys talk, I can try and find it. I know I have it like recently sent to me by someone. I'll send it to you, Jay.
Yeah. First day out. Is it first day out?
Yeah.
Hey, I think I got it.
Yeah, first day out rap song.
Okay, let's hang on.
Yeah, because I got to hear this. I didn't even know anything about this.
Let's hope it's not copyrighted, but it's everywhere. So,
where did I go?
Let's hope if it is copyrighted, you're the last people they come after.
There you go. I'm sure they're going after the entire internet right now.
We're always the first.
And I don't know how to verify, but if TMZ said it's number two on iTunes, I trust them. Whatever being number two on iTunes is worth, but it's something.
Yeah, I got this. Is this it? This it?
Yeah. And it's short. I think it's like a minute something.
I want to go to LA.
Well, shout out Patriot J, Benny Johnson, Big Bongino, Alex Jones, Free My Dogs and Lock Up, the Radical Left's Gone Crazy. I don't bail, I won't see inside a cell. Shout out Thugger, free my slime, slat, YSL. They trying to lock me up, but I'm plugged in ATL. Got homies doing life in jail, they living in hell. These DAs acting silly, my mugshot is worth a billy. So some merchant made a milli, shot me Millie out in Philly. Shot the baby, shot the Sosa, Benny Butcher, them my rollers. Called me racist, but these rappers riding with me, them my soldiers. Mega, I am not who they are after, I'm just in the way they want to get to you, but I won't let them hold on. No, I'm artist. Get back to where I started. I don't need to do the race. I'ma beat them RICO charges. And if I go to prison, you can't do me like the Clintons. I'll be laid up, eating steak with Secret Service chilling, screaming, Orange Man bad. The whole world mad. Thug life. Shout out all of my MAGA base sheds. Coming for the deep state, I will stop the New World Order. But before that, I'll finish walls at the border. YSL, slat, shout out Thugger. Trinity got nothing on us.
That is genius.
That's hilarious.
That is genius.
All right. Okay. This is inspiration. It's spontaneous and it's yeah, they're fucked. The guy, how does he not win? I don't see it.
Oh, man. I don't know.
How he doesn't win is the exact same way he lost in
2020. Well, I mean,
right. Yeah. Get ready for lockdowns.
Well, and they're talking about pulling them off ballots in states and stuff like that. And if they're able to target the right states and get them off the swing states like Michigan and Pennsylvania and get them off the ballots in these states.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, all
hard
that's
to win
all,
if you're not on the ballot. Wait,
right? That's the way that they can influence the election without influencing the election. They're going to do the exact same thing they did in 2020, which is going to have mail-in votes. They'll stack the deck. So it'll be just, you know, votes just showing up. You know, there's even open conversations now. I think the Atlantic and the Economist and all those magazines where it's like elections are dangerous for democracy.
Yeah, they'll just cancel the election.
Yeah,
they'll pull
a New York Times. Zelensky. Yeah, there was one in the New York Times. Aaron McIntyre did a episode about that one, the one that was in the New York Times today.
Yeah.
And what?
Yeah, it was just the guy was like trying to make an argument for like random people being like given power so that there's no like real election. It was weird.
Listen, the only way we can save democracy is to not have elections.
It's one step closer to monarchy, folks, which is what we're all trying to get to. Yarvin and both, you know, being, I'm still a Yarvinist at heart. So it's like we're all going, well, you know. Keep making it easier for us. Okay, let's get to the reading. This is a continuation of our Dugan reading series. Now, Tommy, you said, because we talked offline, and you said you're part of a Dugan Telegram group or some of that.
I'm not on there anymore, but he does have his own Telegram group.
Yeah. He retweeted us, or his Twitter account retweeted us last time we did one of these. So he's out there. And he said something like he seemed to have lost a bit of steam post his daughter being assassinated.
Yeah. Well, what had happened was there was he was supposed to be being transported, and he wasn't in the car, but his daughter was, and a car bomb went off and killed his daughter. And so I don't know about lost steam, but the Telegram channel really turned into more of like a memorable mm-hmm. or memorial to her. Yeah. And I was kind of like, all right, yeah. I was kind of on there to read his articles and his theory and stuff like that. You started getting a little bit less of that whenever his daughter was killed. And my heart goes out to him and his loss for his daughter. You know, I don't wish that on anybody, you know, whether it's Joe Biden, Alexander Dugan, anybody. Like that's terrible. So I understand his pain and his suffering, but it kind of killed my purpose of being in the Telegram channel. So I left the channel because I wasn't getting what I wanted out of it.
Yeah. Dugan seems to be one of these guys on the, we'll call it the right or the dissident, whatever. Right. However people are giving terminology to it. He's like a little bit like Yarvin and a few others who people glom onto for a bit. He becomes a bit of a poster child and then people kind of get disassociated with or disenchanted with. I think when they realize that Dugan and Putin and the rest of them are really, they're Russian centered. They might be very good for Russia, but they don't care about everyone else. Like it's like, if this benefits you somehow, great, cool. But that's not their objective. And in many ways, their objective is to crush the West so that they can prosper. And so a lot of their ideas, while attractive and I think are useful for breaking liberal frames inside your own brain, it's a good diagnostic, but probably a lousy praxis, all things considered. But I still think he's worthwhile to read and chew on, because all ideas can get put on the table and we can Benihana this shit, where we get to select what we like and what we think is useful.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, so part three: the schism in the U.S., Trumpism and its enemies, the enemy within. In a more limited context, and I'll read through. Tell me to stop anytime you want to add context, or you have any ideas about what we're reading.
Yeah, feel free to interrupt. We usually get about one paragraph every 15 minutes.
Okay. The enemy within. In a more limited context in the framework of the general history of liberalism from Occam to Biden, the Democratic victory rested from Trump in the battle for the White House in the winter of 2020-21 also has enormous ideological significance. This has to do primarily with the process unfolding within American society itself. The fact is that after the fall of the Soviet Union and the onset of the unipolar moment in the 1990s, global liberalism has had no external opponents. At least it seems so at the time, in the context of the optimistic expectation of the end of history. Although such precautions proved premature, Fukuyama did not simply wonder if the future had arrived. He was strictly following the very logic of the liberal interpretation of history, and so with some adjustments, his analysis was generally correct. In fact, the norms of liberal democracy, the market elections, capitalism, and the recognition of human rights, the norms of civil society, adopting technocratic transformations, and a desire to embrace the development and implementation of high technology, especially digital technology, were in some ways established throughout humanity. If some persisted in their aversion to globalization, this could be seen as mere inertia, as an unwillingness to be blessed with liberal progress.
When he's referring to the liberal, sort of the liberal frame there, is it kind of like that all of liberalism, like classical liberalism to all the way to Bidenism, all encompassed in one, and that sort of Whig theory that like all change is progress and only good things could come? Is that, like, do you know enough about him? Is that a, because I'm not sure what he's referring to specifically by the liberal thing there.
Well, when he's talking about liberal progress, have you read Suicide of the West by James Burnham?
No,
I have. We cover that over on Caleb Brown's channel. If you want to go check that out, Caleb and I did a three-part series on that.
So the way that Burnham describes it is that anything after the introduction of liberal, classical liberalism, anything beyond that, whether it's progressivism, anything that kind of evolves out of that is still liberalism. It's still liberal, right? And it's the same thing. And that's what he's getting at. He's like, look, y'all, this liberalism that you've adopted is just going to continue to evolve and continue to move forward and continue to kind of run over individuals and people. And it's kind of like that old saying, people don't have ideas. Ideas have people. So it's manifested into a being of its own. And it's like a train running downhill. And it's going to continue to pick up steam unless people stand up and stop it. Because it's just going to keep moving in the same direction. There's no going. If you go backwards, you're no longer liberal, right? So if you're if you're like, I'm a liberal, but I'm a 90s liberal, well, then you're not liberal. You're right. Conservative. You right. See what I'm saying? Okay, so yeah, he's yeah. talking about that continuous momentum and that downhill
movement. Well, and even to get even further out, I would say that conservatism is the same thing as liberalism. You know, we talk about
classical American conservatism.
Yeah. Well, this is what Dugin lays out in the chapter before when he talks about nominalism and sort of the ideas forwarded by Occam, which became the more dominant school, where the idea is that liberalism is a totalizing system. So communism, fascism, libertarianism, all these things are still in liberal frame. These are all liberal identities. These things are only possible because of liberalism, either in reaction to hyper-individualism, which is nominalism set up by Occam, or they are in defense of it. Either way, they're sort of like sects within the like, you know, if you take Christianity and you take all the different sects, we wouldn't say that Protestants aren't Christian. They're just, well, maybe I would, but all these things are still within the frame of Christianity. This is the same with liberalism. So to break the liberal frame correctly or completely, you have to separate it completely from.
Well,
from
so can you then maybe define it by something in opposition to it? What would be non-liberal? What would be a non-liberal thing? Monarchy?
Yeah, you can say monarchy. But
religious.
Theocracy,
monarchy, those are things outside of the liberal frame.
Let's put it this way. Anything that is not just reacting to hyper-individualism, but is actually in defiance of, like, does not include individualism as its as an entity within it, right, would be outside the liberal frame. So, and this is again going with the more nominalism idea of individualism, that you are an individual. This is where consent and everything else we talked about at the beginning of the show, all these things hinge on this idea that even the child is an individual, and the child is an individual has individual rights, and those rights must be respected. Even though obviously a child, what's more true about humanity is that you are the individual is a part of a collective, and you have. All your sense of being comes from this collective, a collective history, a collective culture, a collective family, everything that was required to produce you in your time is reflected in you. And you can't separate these two things. It's the absolute paradox of being. In the attempt to itemize those things and separate them, saying that the collective exists over here and the individual exists over here. This is where this is where liberalism is terminal. Because it can't rest on the individual. All of history can't rest on you. It's too punishing. It's too much.
Right.
You can't reinvent reality with each individual. It's just too much. The individual can't do it, which is where you get this sort of mass
even trends, nihilism. Right, fall into that, which is trying to reinvent humanity one person at a time.
Not only that, but the entire weight of the gender is on you. Like, you are now the representation of an entire gender. Like, it's too much.
There are 7 billion genders, right?
Right. And but they all fall on you because you are representing all of them, right?
When it's like
that's what individualism gets you.
It's like what Courtney was talking about on the podcast I released yesterday. Like, all these isms, all they really boil down to are tactics, right? It's all tactics. The difference between fascism and communism are the tactics that are used to promote that particular line of thought, right? The difference between liberalism, communism, fascism is just a tactic. Liberalism is really what we experience today as liberalism or progressivism is really closer to what traditionally was known as Fabianism, right? It was Fabian socialism,
right?
Right. And so, but it was all about tactics. The only thing they argued with the communists and the fascists on was just the tactics, right?
Are they the wolf in sheep's clothing guys?
And then they changed. Yes. And then they changed their mascot to a tortoise.
Oh, yeah.
That slow creep, that slow crawl, just that incrementalism.
Right.
That's how liberalism works. That's how progressivism works. So you promote the individual identity at the expense of the national identity in order to lift up a global identity.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, sorry, Jay. That helped me a lot. Because that's just, yeah. Yeah.
But where were you? In other words, it was not ideological opposition, but only an unfortunate nuisance. I think I've left something here. In fact, the norms of liberal democracy, the market, elections, capitalism, the recognition of human rights, the norms of civil society, adopting technocratic transformations, and a desire to embrace the development of implementation of high technology, especially digital technology, were in some ways established throughout humanity. If some persisted in their own aversion to globalization, this could be seen as mere inertia, as an unwillingness to be blessed with liberal progress. In other words, it was not an ideological opposition, but only an unfortunate nuisance. Civilizational differences were to be gradually erased. The adoption of capitalism by China, Russia, and the Islamic world would sooner or later entail processes of political
democratization.
Thank you. The weakening of national sovereignty and the eventual lead, and it would eventually lead.
Fucking words, man.
Fuck it. It's one of those words that I could say without reading it. Like if I can.
Yes. Like yeah, in your head, it, you're saying it, but it won't.
But as
come
soon as I see
tongue?
It on paper, I'm like, fuck that word. The weakening of national sovereignty would eventually lead the institutional planetary system, a world government. This is not a matter of ideological struggle, but a matter of time. And so again, the tortoise, right? Like it's the frog in the pot, right?
It's that incrementalism. And you notice he brings up getting rid of the national sovereignty in order to institute a planetary system.
Yeah, which goes back to what you were saying and makes sense. If it's only the individual, then you need, if there is no other higher thing, then you must default to global
leadership. Look how Christina Freeland is now phrasing it and calling it a capitalist democracy.
If you go back in that paragraph, I'm sorry, just go back one page and then finish what you're saying, and I'll point out what I was looking at. You're right there. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Christina Freeland in her commencement speech is now defining the old order as capitalist democracy, and what the conversation around the dinner tables is capitalist democracy still functioning? It's like, where did that term come from? Mm-hmm. So now they're actually defining the old world, and they fought all these wars to get to make all these countries capitalist democracies, and now they're turning around, going capitalist democracy is bad. This new thing we're becoming good, right? Mm-hmm. And they're just creating these new ideological scapegoats, where you force these countries into these paradigms, and now you turn around going that paradigm is bad. You're not as evolved as we are, and This is the continual process, which is leading, I think, to BRICS of a whole bunch of countries going, actually, fuck you. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So if you look at the second sentence of the last paragraph, civilizational differences were to be gradually erased. This is what I was talking about earlier, getting identity to the value of zero, right? Mm-hmm. You water it down. You make it like air. It's valueless, right? You don't buy air. Air is free. Air is everywhere, right? So you make it valueless to be like have your own cultures. You make cultures valueless. You make identities valueless. And then it just becomes one conglomerate, as Jay Dyer likes to call it, the Gumby people, right?
That's an interesting, just sparked my mind, because I'm always trying to figure out what are the motivations behind things like mass immigration. Obviously, you have sort of the JQ theory, and you also have my own personal one, which was always just import conflict, and then you can do top-down controls. When you have people fighting in the streets, you can bring in the stormtroopers. But if you look at this, also, if your goal is world government, what better way to attain that than just mixing everybody to the point where there is no discernible identity geographically,
or both.
Everything is mixed, then
it's both.
I remember saying
that's what Orthodox like to say, it's both and, not either or.
Yeah, yeah, all three.
Conflict, you keep the conflict going until the masses beg for total control.
Precisely.
I remember saying back in 2015, when I was really starting to see things moving, and I didn't have this framework to deal with it. But I was saying to my one of my friends who's still very blue pilled about this, and I said to him, you know, Western civilization as we know it is done, it's finished. Mm-hmm. And the reaction was like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, well, it's over. We're in the end stages. I'm not saying that the whole artifice.
Yeah, hi, Brian.
I'm not saying this is not the collapse. He's trying to keep his name out of it.
My name out your mouth.
Out your co-host's mouth.
Yeah, but it is coming. Let's continue with this. Tommy, we got you for a little bit longer. I just
like yeah. Let me go grab a drink. But I'm good.
Yeah, yeah.
Read on.
We'll vamp for a sec. I'll read. I'll wait for Tom to get back so he can comment on this. Oh.
You should say vamp or vape.
You can do both. What's going on in the chat, folks? I had to mute somebody who was getting a little annoying.
Oh yeah, I gotta start wearing my glasses for these shows. I think it would make it much more entertaining.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When you start playing along, when you start saying hail stuff in the chat, like it's like, dude, you know, we say enough spicy stuff on the show. I don't need the help.
We don't need your,
you know, we just
two bits.
Here's an interesting thing.
It's our two bits.
Here's an interesting thing. So we had this community strike on YouTube, and it just got lifted on August 30th, because I guess 3 months ago we had said something about the flu.
And the show.
Yeah, and got a warning saying if you do it again, you're gonna be in big trouble.
All you have to do is be a trans kid, and then you don't get in trouble.
Well, exactly.
Us pesky grown men.
We need to
go stand in the corner, Jason.
So it got lifted on August 30th, and now I just noticed that they're offering. They're offering now, YouTube is going to be offering a program of policy education to help you lift your bans or your strikes faster.
Get Jordan Peterson.
Right? And I'm tempted.
Social media training, bitch.
I'm tempted to do it and just record it all for posterity. Because on one hand, of course, we know it's evil. But on the other hand, it's like,
let's do it and live stream it. Will that be breaking some kind of?
We'll see. Because I would not be shocked to find out they have an NDA attached to this or something along the lines. You certainly couldn't do it on YouTube. You could probably do it over on Rumble, which we are over on Rumble, folks. You want to go there and send us a rant?
No, because sharing YouTube's social media training with the social media, it's just as dangerous as like outing kids to their parents.
Well, so it would be interesting to see how they deal with it, because it's either going to be if you share it, you get zapped, or they want you to share it.
But if they want you to share it, they have to possibly be achieving the goals they would want through.
They have to know that people are going to share it. They have to know that. Like they can't be that dense. Sorry, Tom. We're just talking.
Yeah, well, no, because there's always the very
re-education program that they're pushing.
There's always the very real possibility that they're idiots who didn't think it through.
It's the greatest part of my day is I walk out of here where we're reading Alexander Dugan, and I walk out, and my wife's watching Cheers reruns.
It's actually the more healthier.
The contrast, man.
I actually think it's a healthier option to really to be honest. Okay, let's continue.
We need to do after this show.
Yeah, I'd like to get down to at least the Trump and revolt of the deplorables.
All right.
Where was
we? We were on the second paragraph.
Yes.
It was in this context.
It was in this context that the globalists took further steps to advance their basic program of abolishing
anti-Semite. He said globalists. He's an anti-Semite.
Hey, ban the ADL to save Jewish lives. It's just how it goes. It was in this context that the globalists took further steps to advance their basic program of abolishing all residual forms of collective identity. This primarily concerned gender politics as well as the intensification of migration flows, designed to permanently erode the cultural identity of Western societies themselves, including Europe and America. Thus, globalization dealt its main blow to its own. In this context, an enemy within began to emerge in the West itself. This is all those forces that resented the destruction of sexual identity, the destruction of the remnants of cultural tradition through migration, and the weakening of the middle class. The post-humanist horizons of the impending singularity and the replacement of humans with artificial intelligence were also increasingly worrisome. And on the philosophical level, not all intellectuals accepted the paradoxical conclusions of postmodernity and speculative realism. In addition, there was a clear contradiction between the Western masses living in the context of the old norms of modernity and the globalist elites, seeking at all costs to accelerate social, cultural, and technological processes as understood in the liberal liberal optic. Thus, a new ideological dualism began to take shape, this time within the West rather than outside of it. The enemies of the open society now appeared within Western civilization itself. They are those who rejected the latest liberal ends and did not accept gender policies, mass immigration, or the abolition of nation states and sovereignty.
Right. At the same time. Have y'all read De Tocqueville, Democracy in America?
Yeah.
Okay.
Stop asking how many things we've read.
Okay, so
Mark's answer is always going to be no.
But, okay. Yes. Sorry. All right. So one of the things.
Listen to it.
This one is the extent of my intellectual endeavors is this show.
That's all right.
I'm here as the everyman.
I'm bringing water to a desert person.
You probably have better mental health than either one of us because you haven't read all this stuff. All right. So one of the things that De Tocqueville talks about in the book Democracy in America is that the only way, and this was what in the early 1800s, late 1700s. I mean, it wasn't long after the revolution that he wrote this book. He was sent over from Paris to examine and diagram the way that America does politics, right? And one of the things he said was the only way America falls is from within, mm-hmm. You know? And that's what he's laying out here. He's laying out how the infiltration took place and what it's doing and the corrosion that has taken place. Now, it seems to me from what Dugan's saying here, he's actually simplified it quite a bit and not taking it back far enough. He's not looking at the implementation of the Federal Reserve and what that did to the American people, to the American currency, and how that hurt the family and depleted our culture. But he's got a general idea of what's happened in America as far as the infiltration of the politics of the United States.
Yeah. Well, that's what I got from it was also that as America or the West has followed along with this playbook, that I don't know whether it was expected or not, but the resistance is now from within, right? It's not a foreign country for the first time. This is like, if you look at what they did post 9/11 with turning the Patriot Act and everything inwards, I'm thinking of the trucker protest, MAGA, right? This is all the same thing. These are the straight white middle-class Christian guys like us going, hey, wait a sec. I like my country. I like my guns. I like my Bible. And I don't want to be part of an amorphous blob of universal rule from a,
right. It's something I mentioned.
The enemy is us now.
It's something I mentioned on the podcast with Courtney is that they have us distracted thinking that that World War III is between Russia and NATO, right. But it's really between the globalist and the nationalist.
Well, yeah, Ellie just really said it in the chat, right?
It's really those that want that sovereignty and that nation state to survive and to have that national identity. That's where the real world war is taking place. Mm-hmm. And it's happening across the globe, which is why if you look at that song, Richmond, North of Richmond, you had people from other countries like in Hungary and Spain commenting on that, saying how it touched them when mm-hmm. it's about those in DC, right? I'm sorry, I didn't get to read that. If you'll pull that back up.
Jesse says, anyone watch the Tucker speech and Orban interview?
That was a great interview.
Yeah, Hungary is being victimized by liberalism. They tried to defeat Orban for wrong thing, but he has support from his people. I said very early on, I remember way back when they started putting Eastern European countries into the EU, I'm like, you're going to regret this, because especially post-Soviet satellite states, is that they just went through 75 years of not having a country. Depending on the country, they're not going back. They're not going to fit in easily. Poland has been the more, Poland's always wanted to be a European country, but even they're kicking back going, yeah, but we're also a Catholic Christian country. Like there's some things that are not going to fly here. And the same thing in Romania and the same thing in Hungary and the same thing in a lot of these countries where it's like you're trying to amalgamize people who would be against your system to their very fiber being. Like this isn't just a political or ideological spat. This is like into essence of being kind of stuff.
Not even that they're more opposed to it than countries like Canada, sort of these blobby Western countries would be, but they recognize it more readily. Like they see it a million miles away. The same way I can look at a gender cultist and be like, well, I grew up in a cult. I can smell that fish from, I don't even need to be in the same, you know, zip code. And I can recognize instantly, they can look at this and they're like, oh, we know exactly what that is. We're not interested in it. Whereas us here, we'd never experienced it. We're just kind of like waking up slowly. But, you know, you see.
Well, and one of the things I recognize when we're reading through this is this is a very succinct summary. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get into the details of this, then you would have to go and look into Cecil Rhodes, and you would have to look into, you know, the Anglo-American establishment and all these different things that have been written over the years. And he's summarized it in three paragraphs.
Yeah.
And it's like, I understand. Right? I can see. Yeah, exactly. Tavistock, Club of Rome. You get in. I can see what he's talking about on such a deep level because of the stuff I've read. But he's saying it in such a way where you didn't have to read all the stuff I read to look at it and say, yeah, that's what's happening. Yeah. I recognize this.
So
yeah.
Dugin's other big work, political work, is the fourth political theory. And this is sort of a mini primer. I haven't even read that.
I've read book. That one. That's the only thing by him I've read other than articles.
I've read parts of it. I'm going to do a deep dive after we get this done on my own.
This motherfucker's going to turn into a Russian spy before it's all said and done.
Right. Hey man, my Ukrainian national pass is very much at odds with all this stuff. when we do the Putin friend or fed, there's a part of me that's just dying inside. Like, just like, what have I become?
Overthrow Moscow.
My sweetest friend. I hurt myself today. But in Ukrainian. So this, I've compared this a little bit to, this is sort of like his 12 rules for life versus Maps of Meaning. So if anyone knows about Jordan Peterson, his big omnibus book is Maps of Meaning, which is more academic and very dense and all that stuff. And then he puts out 12 rules for life, and you can see a lot of overlaps. There's a lot of things going on there. There you are. So if you think of fourth industrial,
I own,
I have 12 rules for life. Fourth political theory is the omnibus, and then this is more of a easier to understand, direct to the public kind of book. And remember, he's writing this. This is originally published in Russian. He's writing this for Russians more than.
When this is circa what? Is this recent?
2021 was released was published in 2021. So
I was going to say,
I think it's published in English as well.
I have 12 rules for life too, but guess what? Didn't read it.
I gave you that copy.
You did.
I have it on audio, it's and I have it
somewhere over there.
Yeah. Okay, let's get this done. It was in this context, and then in addition, there was a clear contradiction between the Western masses living in the context of the old norms of modernity and the globalist elites seeking at all costs to accelerate social, cultural, and technological process as understood in the liberal optic. Thus, a new ideological dualism began to take shape, this time within the West. I've already read this, but we'll go over this again. This time within the West rather than outside of it. The enemies of the open society now appeared within the Western civilization itself. They they were those who rejected the latest liberal ends and did not accept gender politics, mass migration, or the abolition of the nation states and sovereignty. At the same time, however, this growing resistance, generally referred to as populism or right-wing populism, drew on the very same liberal ideology, capitalism and liberal democracy, but interpreted these values and benchmarks in the old rather than the new sense. Freedom was conceived here as the freedom to hold any views, not just those that conform to the norms of political correctness. Democracy was interpreted as majority rule. The freedom to change gender was to be combined with the freedom to remain faithful to family values. The willingness to accept migrants who express a desire to improve their ability to integrate into Western society was strictly differentiated from the blanket acceptance of all without distinction, accompanied by continuous apologies to any newcomers for the West's colonial past. Gradually, the globalist internal enemy gained serious proportions and great influence. The old democracy challenged the new one. This is an interesting thing, right? And this is, I think, hits at a major contention I have with a lot of conservatives or right wing, whatever, is you'll hear people say, well, you know, we're fine with gender transition if you're 18 or above. Mm-hmm. We're fine with immigration, mass immigration, as long as they go through the process. We're fine with XYZ as long as it meets XYZ criteria, which to me is like, look, if transitioning a child is wrong, then it doesn't get right when you're 18. It doesn't magically become okay at any other point. If we can say that this is morally wrong,
it's the right wing version of like, it's not happening.
Right. Or it's fine if it happens when you're past a magical point. And again, it's all about it's consent laws, but writ large, saying that after a certain point, or if you filled out the right paperwork, we're not responsible for the outcomes. Like, oh, how did this happen? Like, as if mass immigration, as long as everyone's, you know, put their name on a piece of paper or filled out had an e-visa, well, it's fine then. You know, all the other problems are fine.
If it's fine then, what's wrong with doing it illegally? Is it the same ends? Right? National identity, having a country isn't important as long as you filled out the paperwork. That's
because it's
only the illegality that bothers me. But that's again that now you're appealing to. This is Trump. This is Polyev. This is a lot of these. This is my criticism towards what it sounds like he's getting at. There is that at least the leaders of these so-called populist movements are going to be a bulwark to the liberal framework, which I haven't seen that. That's still my opposition.
What he's pointing out is being rational and respectful of your political opponents is fruitless, right? He's saying it's like Michael Malice saying that conservatism is progressivism going the speed limit, right? Mm-hmm. He's saying if you're willing to make concessions and meet in the middle, then you've already lost ground. And that losing ground is not acceptable at this point. We're at a point in time where everybody should be digging their heels in, going not one more inch.
Not one more inch. We got to go.
You have to stop the forward momentum before you can pull the sled back.
Yeah.
Right.
But do you think a Trump can do that when he's never even proposed the idea?
Do I think a Trump can do that? No, I don't think it's going to happen at the national level. The only reason I want to vote for Trump, like I said earlier, is because it pisses off all the people I hate. That's it. Really. It's just, and it's the only reason I'm considering registering to vote. It's like, cause if he wins, it pisses off all the people I hate.
Yeah. And it feels like a victory.
This is bigger than Trump. It's bigger than Putin. You know, Dugin's been an open critic of
Putin. And by saying bigger than, is its family. Mm-hmm. It's the family.
Yeah, it's bigger than them.
We have to recognize that the family unit is the biggest thing there is to save. Not the country, not the national identity. It's the family. And that as long as we're ignoring the family on behalf of the federal government, we're losing the battle. It starts at home, and we all should be doing what it takes at home to win this fight. Mm-hmm. Because it was a long, slow march to get here. It's going to be a long, slow march to turn it around and go back. Yeah, but you can only control you, and you can only control your immediate circle. Electing some guy that makes promises that are never kept, sometimes because they can't be kept for whatever reason, whether it's bureaucracy, enemies within, whatever, that does no good. That's not where the battle's won. The battle's won at home, right? And that's where it needs to be changed. And until people understand that keeping families together and raising your own children and being involved in that future culture is what's important. It's not today. You're not going to win that battle today. A lot of people, and I mentioned this, I was talking to Courtney about, is a lot of people, normies especially, open their eyes and it seemed like everything changed overnight. But if you look, it's been a slow, gradual change. And it wasn't, and so people think that electing somebody like a Trump and putting him in office is going to change everything back overnight, because in their minds, it feels like everything changed overnight. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if they can change everything overnight, we can revert it back overnight. And that's not what happened. It's been gradual. It's been slow. It's been a process that has been taking place behind the scenes in colleges and university, in the bureaucracies, the administrative state, for decades. Yeah. And it's going to take decades to get the ship turned around and put back on the right track.
The only way it could dramatically, radically change is if someone got in office, let's say, nuclear, let's just say it's Trump. No.
Well, or what's the
another flood will fix it.
But,
well, but could you El Salvador this shit? What's his name?
Yes, you could.
Right, that's the question. Yes, I don't know, because I'm of two minds, because there's also an allegory here to like the kind of Christianity I was raised in, where they believe was that it couldn't be imposed top down. If you wanted to save the world, you had to do it person to person, and that. If you went to the government, you said, okay, well, we're a Christian country now and everyone's forced to pray and whatever. That doesn't mean they're establishing a personal relationship with Jesus Christ on their own that's going to actually matter or save their souls, right? So I think there's always that interplay here. It's like, okay, if you imposed it, if you took over as a dictator, imposed it top down, is that achieving the goal? Is that winning?
Well, and then we gotta ask the question, if electing like a Trump or a Vivek Ramaswamy or Ron DeSantis or one of these guys could slow it down enough for us to start turning the culture around at a lower level, because the culture is controlled at the lower level. It is not controlled from the upper regime, right?
It's reflected on the upper regime.
There is a hierarchy, but that hierarchy can only act in congruence with the culture. Right.
In the old system, the king would set the ideal, right? So the king, the royalty would often set the parameters for the culture, and that would trickle down to the masses, and the masses, by using the king as a model, would then create culture around that model, and create stories and all this stuff that
lists. Is there anybody running for office that you would trust to set that ideal?
Or anyone who's running for office who we think could set a standard that would live on past them, right? Because that's the real question is that sustainability. You get Trump in 4 years, let's say, and he goes ham, right? He goes full Yarvin ham and says, you know what? I have the power of the executive. I'm going to pull in the all power of the executive to do all these crazy things, right? Crazy by modern Western civilization limits, and take on all the slings.
By crazy, he means correct.
Right. Take on all the slings and arrows and all the rest of it, and we're just going to, this is top down, boom.
Yeah, but what
the question then is, sorry, Tommy, let me finish. The question is this: does that survive him? And if he doesn't set up a system that it would survive him, then it doesn't matter. Like, all you do is get 4 years of change.
I don't think that's the question. I don't think that's the question. I think the question is, if I'm looking at the president, Am I telling my kids to be more like that guy?
Right.
Yeah, I don't
that's,
know anyone.
That's
right
the
now.
Guy you want in office, right? Yeah. Is there anybody running that is that guy?
Because it worked for the liberals with Obama.
Because right? if there's nobody there that's going to set an example, that's going to be a good example, the best you can hope for is somebody that's going to put the brakes on enough for you to start finding examples or setting your own example.
Yeah, I mean, that question puts me back in my libertarian frame, which is why I've said anyone willing to take on that position isn't worthy of it. And that's why I have disdain for politicians in general. And I prefer to revert to either someone close to me in my immediate family or Jesus as an example to point my kids towards and say, listen, politicians are all just take away as much of their power so they can do as least damage. I don't know. Terrible.
Is that audio cut out?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay. Weird.
I'm here. I mean, we're done.
I'm waiting for the hot chick to start crooning me.
Go, Jay.
I only have eyes for you.
We're almost at an hour 30. I don't want to keep it forever. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in, for all the comments. Please like, subscribe, share, do all the things. We appreciate each and every one of you, except for that guy who was trying to be too spicy.
Yeah, fuck that guy. Yeah. Tommy, you want to do a quick pitch again before we sign off?
LibertarianInstitute.org/year-0/. That's where you can find all my audio. I'm uploading one tonight that I have recorded. So amazing. That's the one I keep talking about with Courtney Turner. So go check it out. It'll be up in 10 minutes.
Yep, always a pleasure.
This is what we're going to be building towards, a Putin friend or fed that we will announce sometime in September. But maybe he's frozen. Maybe it's Maybelline. You never know.
I don't know. All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Like, subscribe, share, and donate. Do all the stuff. Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Tommy. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Have a good night.